Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The picture that got small.
Your first one's on us.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm your host, Mark Riccadonna, and with me, as always,
Richie Byrne,
and your producer, Sol Joel.
Today is a very...
Legend day.
This is...
Legend.
Not only is he a legend, he's my mentor, he was the first guy to really show me what the road's like.
Yeah.
Legend.
He has a 3.5-foot... Let's just keep going. One of my favorite people on the entire planet, DJ Hazard.
DJ Hazard, ladies and gentlemen.
Gentlemen, scholars,
if you don't know who DJ is, that's okay. Most people don't.
No, they probably don't.
But he is a comics know DJ.
Yeah, you can go to the highest
anywhere
comic on the planet and ask them.
You say DJ Hazard.
And they all say the same thing. Mm. DJ Hazard's the man.
It's the weirdest thing. I was on this dating site.
And perfect segue.
Yeah, and I noticed somebody looked at me, and she was in Nebraska, okay? But she had a kind of nice look about her. And I just kind of like, we started chatting. And then her son goes by, because she's divorced, but her son's like in the 20s and stuff like that. And who's that? DJ Hazard. Oh, he's funny. That's probably the biggest reach ever. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Her son said that.
Yeah, in Nebraska.
So him and I, he was the first comic that I was on a paid show, and I opened up for him. So that's what DJ means to me. And the funny, after that, I really...
He's one of the first for me.
Really?
Not the first, but the first where
same
I...
Same here.
One of the first. It was in Mike Kinney's room.
Lake Ontario Playhouse.
Yeah.
And see, I'm kind of...
Yeah.
Bring you guys around.
Feel like chickens tonight. Remember you used to do the... Untie my ankles in the morning.
Yes,
oh,
yes,
my
yes.
God.
But what really amazed me is that I came and hung out one night right after that to Dangerfields. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, for whatever night, it was during the week, there was a huge college crowd that came in.
Yeah.
And you got in your head, which most comics do, and you're like, well, you've seen my act. These kids are going to hate me.
Right.
And you went on stage and murdered that room.
Murdered.
Oh.
My wife says this about DJ. She goes, you could put DJ in front of a room of kindergartners, and you could put DJ in front of a room in a prison. He'll kill and
either
do
way.
The same stuff.
Yeah.
I've done the prison.
Seriously.
And not his act.
No, seriously, I did at least one prison. And it was up in Massachusetts at Bridgewater State, Walpole, I don't know those things. And Lenny Clark and a whole bunch of us, the Comedy Connection, put us together. And there was like three acts. Lenny Clark was hosting a whole shebang. Two funny things. One thing, my opening line is like, you can never do it anywhere else again, right? But I go out there, and they get a nice bunch of guys, you know, and I say, how you guys doing?
They all knew Lenny.
Yeah, yeah. But,
yeah,
but they're very warm. It's almost like doing the USO shows, you know what I mean? They're happy. And how you guys? They told me to do 15 to 20. I said, minutes, right? But my intro, okay? It's a prison within a prison where there's no guns on the inside. So you go through this one set of walls, and then there's like a moat, and then no more guns, no more sharps. They search your stuff and everything. Then you go inside. Even the guards set up guns, stuff like that. And it looks like a high school hallway. It's just that white tile kind of stuff going on, and the color coding all over the place. And so there's doors. There's like blue door, red door, yellow door, green door going down the hallway. And our guy who's brought us there, he's like giving us the whole, you know, rundown before we go on stage through the door. And, I'm facing the other way. Everybody's facing, and I see this guard come down, and he goes down to, like, not the red door, not the green door, but the blue door, takes out his keys, opens it up. I see there's like a toilet and a sink in there. Comes out, right? Goes away, right? So we're about to go on stage, and Lenny goes, wait a second, I got to take a piss. And I go, right down there, the blue door. He goes, how the fuck you know that? So he gives me, ladies and gentlemen, this guy says it's his first time here. But he knows his way around here a little too fucking well.
That's funny.
Oh, my God.
That's funny. That's really.
Now, you would say you can only do the joke
once, right?
Yeah.
I opened the U. I did the. I was the first comedian to ever perform at the United Nations.
Yeah.
And I got on stage and said, anybody here from out of town? Three Americans laughed and everybody else raised their hand.
Was it a room full of Joels?
That's cruel. That's cold.
Yeah, I love when DJ goes, Richie, are you sore? Because that was a stretch.
Thanks for bringing up a joke that no one heard the setup to.
No, but that was, I loved it.
They're psychic, they know.
But everybody knows DJ, and right. Everybody has a DJ story. No matter where I go, especially if it's a comic who has any kind of Boston roots, mm-hmm. I always immediately go, like, hey, I'm really good friends with DJ Hazard. And I got to meet one of my heroes, who you have a great history with, but Bobcat Goldthwait.
Oh, yeah.
He has the career I would kill someone for. He makes great movies, and he does stand-up, and he just does whatever he wants. Nobody tells him what to do. And I went to the Woodstock Film Festival mm-hmm. and watched his Bigfoot movie. It was the first time they were playing it. And I go up to him, and I tell him that I'm friends with you. And he immediately like, oh, you're a Boston guy. And I go, no, I live in New York. He actually DJs from where I live in Astoria. DJ was born and raised there. And, you know, and he was, so then he just kept talking to me about Boston shit. It's great that Boston's getting another club. And mm-hmm. I don't know anything about Boston.
No.
So he wasn't listening to you at all.
Not at all. He just heard DJ.
He heard
got
DJ.
Excited.
Boston guy.
He didn't care.
When Bobcat was first starting it out, he started out in Syracuse, New York. Him and Barry Crimmins and Tom Kenny were all part of a little.
Bob really?
Kenny, SpongeBob.
Yeah. What, and, yeah. And, were they in college together there, or were they from there?
I don't know. They're somewhere. They're different ages. So, mm-hmm. But okay. Skinny Atlas, New York, outside of Syracuse, right?
Skinny Atlas?
Yeah, so that's how Bobcat got his name, because they all hung around together, and Barry was Bearcat, Tom was Tomcat, and
Get
Bob was Bobcat.
Get out of here, really?
And he kept it as part of his professional name.
The Cat Brothers.
Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah.
And look at that.
Once in Blue Moon, we called Crimmins, got the rest of his soul. Bearcat. Hey, Bearcat, what's up? And but when he came, sooner or later, everybody would come through Boston and like just like try to do a weekend or a gig or something. They go, I'm not ever leaving here. This is amazing. Because we're making oodles of money. There's tons and tons and tons of work. So Goldthwait comes out because, you know, Barry knew him. So Barry, you know, putting him up and stuff like that. He's a young kid, little pudgy, innocent kid, had a great act. Is he was just starting that crazy
mm-hmm.
thing. It used to be his closing bit, where he's reading a Dear John letter. Yeah, you know, and but the rest of his act was like totally.
It's like nice clay.
Yeah, you know. And so I'm driving around one day. We're doing stuff, and he's just trying to find his you know, he asked me a million questions about Boston, about this, about that. And he goes, "What do you do about taxes?" And I'm driving around. I'm thinking. I don't have any jokes about taxes. A couple years later, that would all change. I have plenty of jokes about taxes.
Yeah. God.
All right. So, how we usually start every show?
Yes.
Is we talk
well
about
how we say we usually start, but we don't.
This was just our intro to DJ.
Yes.
This is going uphill from here.
Yes.
We usually talk about our guest, what their favorite drink is.
Oh.
And I'm gonna. I have an idea. When I think of DJ Hazard, I think Grand Marnier, because you introduced me to it. I've never had it before.
I was trying to, you know.
Classic.
We're not going to edit this episode.
No, you had him at hello.
Yeah, this is going to post as is. This is very little work for the producer.
Mark's the only one when you go, you want a Grand Marnier? He goes, no, it'll only dull my senses later when you're fucking me.
I prefer to keep it.
You put the Grand in Marnier.
But you put it in coffee, and it was so good.
It's very good.
I put it in coffee, and then I used to I put Kahlua in beer.
Really?
Yeah. Shot of Kahlua in, like, in a nice PBR. Yeah. It's like chocolate
that
beer.
That sounds good. No,
I'm going to have one.
But my favorite one single drink is I was living a million years ago with a gal, and she's still alive. I didn't, you know. And And I was out of work.
She lives in the flower garden up back.
Yes, she's into flowers. Flowers are into her. But I was out of work. I don't know what the deal was, but I was like really kind of like sponging off her for a while, feeling kind of good. But we had a pantry, a walk-in pantry off the kitchen that I cleared out, and I had a CB radio. This is how far back it goes. And I built a base station.
You still do. I've seen your phone.
Yes. I've got the...
DJ, do you have a brick in your pocket? That's my phone.
If you can see DJ's phone, it's got a rotary on it.
Have you heard of Obama phones? This is a Lincoln phone. the pantry, the walk-in pantry off of the kitchen, I built a base station for the CB stuff, because this is like, you know, breaker-breaker and
right.
Convoy, all that stuff going on. It was like, I don't even know what it was, the 70s somewhere, and mid-70s. And it was a mobile unit, but I put a base antenna out the window and stuff like that. And there's a lot of highways,
yeah,
like right where I live. All they all kind of merged together. And so I would stay up all night helping truckers, you know, because back then there was no internet. I had maps and stuff like
right.
that. And I'd monitor the truckers and help them out.
This was at a time where you were out of work.
Out of work.
Out of work and thinking, I don't
Who
really
need some help.
I don't need to get a job. Let me do this.
Yeah. Okay. And there was nothing else in the pantry. Except
That's why he's the greatest of all time.
And she hadn't cleared off the top shelf yet. And on the top shelf, there was a bottle of Doors and a bottle of Coke. And I just, that was the only thing around. So I put Doors and Coke, and that became like my favorite drink for billions of years. Yeah.
I like a good Doors.
There you go.
Yeah.
But I think as soon as we're done recording, we're walking over to Brady's and getting
a PBR and a Kahlua.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
I think we should cut this short.
I think we should go one at a time right now and keep the show going.
Barry Crimmins again, okay? RIP, when we're doing running the Ding Ho together. And it was an afternoon or early evening before the show started, something like that. Barry's behind the bar, setting everybody up. And DJ, what do you want? And I said, oh, you know, Doers and Coke. He goes, yes, they'll fall as yet. You know, you can't taste. You put it, well, it's Diet Coke, too, at the time. Okay? Mm-hmm. Doers and Diet Coke. You can't taste Doers. That's a waste of Doers. You put it in Diet Coke. I said, yeah. Come on, try me. We did a blind taste test, okay? And he did like a speed rack beer, a speed rack scotch.
Scotch.
I looked and went, I said, that's the Doers. He goes, son of a bitch. I said, yeah, man, the well, it tastes like gasoline.
Yeah, you can tell.
Yeah, yeah.
So the second thing we do is the jokes. We
so
did
now
the
we
drinks.
Know Doers and
now
Coke.
It's time to
and now it's time. Doers and Diet Coke.
Doers and Diet Coke.
Now we need a
and
joke.
PBR and Kahlua.
Wait, when I was on the wagon, it would be shots of tequila and Heineken.
Hey, well, we had Dr. Oz on the podcast.
He won't quit.
And we talked about his drink, and it was tequila.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us all the...
But he started out with kale.
But he was talking about how the health... It's a healthier... alcohol.
Yeah.
Remember he said, and it made me so mad later because I should have been like, even when you drink, you have to think about what's healthier. Like,
yeah.
But
yeah.
You just said that, you know, tequila, and he says it's healthier than other.
There's always these
alcohols.
Ads pops up on the internet. These ads with, you know, over the sidebar.
Not him. Yeah.
No, but he's always holding up some piece of goo or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
that.
But that's
no,
illegal
no.
shit.
Using his picture. I know. But you know, it's he's always like some piece of snot or something like that. And he says, you'd be amazed at what this can do for your sign, you know, whatever, your sex life, whatever, yeah.
I always still think of you, too, when we used to do the road together. You had the road down to a science. You're like, diet Mountain Dew and beef jerky.
Yeah.
And so you don't fall asleep behind the wheel. I'm like, he's amazing.
It's
like,
well, I found out all over North America, you know, parallel thinking, a lot of other guys and gals all around the country somehow came across it themselves as well.
So you have minions.
It wasn't minions.
You have minions.
On their own, we all came out with the same biochemistry.
Oh, I see. Okay, you weren't mentoring them.
We needed ultimate caffeine.
And most of them are dead.
Yes.
It's good to see you, DJ. Thanks for coming on.
Thank God. I quit the diet Mountain Dew just in time. That stuff has like insecticide.
No,
in
it is.
Drink that's neon green is probably not good. Antifreeze.
Yeah.
But
Mountain Dew.
Diet Mountain Dew and beef jerky, okay? Because what you want is no sugar, because that's going to make you sleepy.
Right.
You want protein, because that's good. And beef jerky. You want a little you know, that's it. You just, you don't want to stay up all night. Stay up all night. You don't want to get sleep. You don't want to get carved out because you get, you don't want to fall asleep at the wheel. Diet Mountain Dew.
I still remember that, man. Yeah. 10 years later.
Yeah. Have you utilized it?
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Here we go.
Look at our builds. We all utilize.
Well, yeah. When I'm not driving, I've been utilizing some other things. But
I was walking down the Hudson River yesterday, and this nice couple, they came in. They were just tourists, stuff like that. And we're talking about, they said, oh, you ever come down to Charleston? I said, oh, if they have you. Hey, well, if you love to eat, they'll have you, right? And I said, dude, look at me. He looked at himself too, Patner. I said, this is, he says, yeah, this is a work in progress. I patted my stomach. I said, this is a Sistine Chapel, dude.
Lots of work in.
So the second part of our show, what we usually do is we tell street jokes. Now, DJ, when you were out and touring, mm-hmm. did you have a lot of people after the show come over to you and go, I got a joke for you.
A lot of times it'd be the most racial
right.
thing. It's like, you know, as soon as they start, like, well, two blah, blah, walking, oh, hey, hi, nice to see you later. Yeah.
Look over both shoulders.
Yeah. Or it's some horribly sexist misogynist.
Something that I found funny was is not only, I used to think, do I have a face that says, come over and tell me your racist joke?
Yes, you do.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter what race you are, because it's something that happened recently. No, yeah. Is I had...
You don't want to know the jokes I want to tell you.
It's his handlebar mustache right now.
Yeah, it's that 70s porn look you got going.
No, but I have people from other races coming over to me and telling me their racist
it's
jokes.
You. Oh, it's you. It's so yes, you have that look. Like, it's he'll appreciate this.
Are they telling you racist jokes about other races? Or
yes.
Race, about their own...
Right. About other races.
They're being racist as well.
So they think I want to be in on their... The Latins don't like blacks.
Yeah.
Or that the blacks don't like
right.
Latin.
And I think you do.
Oh, I love hearing them.
There's a perverted...
Hey, I can listen to a joke and not believe in it.
Right. But there's a perverted beauty in that, that everybody's the same.
Yeah.
Everybody's,
yeah. We all
Everybody's got racial jokes.
Right.
Every race thinks the same, and we all hate the Mexicans.
It's like the cave drawing with the dog chasing the cat chasing the mouse chasing whatever. The bird, the worm, whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Fish. Yeah. That's
and you used to spend like a quarter of the year in Canada, so I can only imagine what Canadian jokes you probably used to hear. Or
they were so weird. Canada is like, I was there so much, I'm practically a charter comedian, you know, a Canadian, I mean. And they actually would forget that I was from the States.
Because you spent so much time there.
Spent so much time there, and I was a nice guy. And they said, dude, we keep forgetting you're from the States. You're a nice guy.
and what does that mean?
Well, I guess they had a lot of guys come up who were just kind of like, not necessarily not nice guys, but they're, I mean, I would always ask
we're
around.
We're way more aggressive than them.
But very, very.
Now, when I played Montreal, I felt those were some of the most aggressive people.
But you, well, that's totally different from the rest of
Canada. But you did Calgary and Edmonton,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like
all
those.
Plains,
like,
and Toronto. And I would, and Winnipeg, and I would. Always, when I had some kind of new joke that down here was like Greyhound bus or something like, you know, some kind of weird thing, I asked them, what do you call it up here before I go on stage, right? Because I never wanted to be that American comic who goes, oh, I went to this Halloween party. Oh, you guys have Halloween up here?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, like you can't acclimate.
Yeah.
I do that all the time. Like, I hate when, even just, like, I have a joke about a 7-Eleven, and I'll be on stage and go, shit! They don't have 7-Eleven here. What do they have here?
Right.
I forgot to ask. I always forget to ask.
Costco. You should always go, your version of.
Yeah.
Costco's Price Club, except in Montreal, it's Club Price.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they don't have, it's in Montreal especially, it's not KFC, it's PFC, because it's like poulet, whatever.
Really?
Yeah. Instead of chicken or whatever. I don't know what the deal is, but. Yeah. I'll fill in the blanks, okay? All this, you know, what do you call this? What do you call this? What do you call this? I do the joke. I get a standing ovation. I'm the only guy who doesn't get the joke.
But they love it.
That's funny.
The band.
Yes, the band. You see.
So what's one of your street jokes?
Okay. A bunch of guys, like our age, where they're always hanging around since school and stuff like that. Hanging around, good, really good friends, and all of them very successful, things like that. They're all really good looking guys, except that there's always that one guy. He's uglier than you know, ugly, but he's a good guy. Hangs around with them, stuff like that. He's a virgin too. He just never, you know, never had a chance. He was just so freaking ugly. Okay, so they're out drinking. Okay, one night, and the other guys are kind of like talking to themselves while he's in the bathroom. He's like, hey, listen, why don't we? Why don't we put our money together and get them, like, you know, a nice high-class call girl, you know, and have her come in here and make it seem like it's a, you know, a fate, you know, kind of an act, you know. Yeah, good idea. So they get a hold, somebody knows somebody, right? And they meet her at the door and stuff. Like, she's beautiful. She's, oh, my God. She's, like, this tall and beautiful. I mean, she's, like, almost like android beautiful. You know what I mean? She's that beautiful. She's, like, perfect, right? And so $1,000, right? So she goes, well, where's the guy? And they point her. She goes, ooh, this is going to be a $2,000 job, okay? They say, okay, so they pony up, okay? So she kind of, like, sits next to the bar, and they kind of, like, you know, catch each other's eyes. And, hey, they start talking. Hey, hi. He's like, having a ball, right? And so finally she goes, hey, I don't like this kind of scene. I was thinking of getting you. Like, you want to come up to my place? Yeah. So he goes up to her place, right? And for a guy who is, you know, looking the way he did and with the lack of experience that he did a nice job. He was very sweet, very gentle. And she actually didn't mind it that much, right? So she's kind of feeling kind of bad before he leaves. And she goes, you know, I got to tell you that your friends paid me $2,000 to sleep with you. He goes, oh. How much to tell them I was the best fuck you ever had?
DJ has.
That's it.
DJ, you have one of my favorite lines that you do on stage when you go, no matter what, you'll probably have to take it over because I'm going to mess this up. This is the only job that where somebody complains.
Wait, that could go a couple different ways. Where are we going?
The horse?
Yes.
That could go a couple of different ways.
Yes, yeah. I talk to the crowd. I say, okay, how many people here? By then, you know, people would talk to me or just admit, raise their hand. How many people here, myself included, has ever at one point said to yourself or said out loud, whether I can't do that, I'll lose my job? And then it's thinking, how does this apply to being a comedian? I mean, you guys be calling the club the next day, right? Yeah, the guy who fucked the horse on stage? When's he coming back?
Oh, my God. I fucking love hanging out with you.
The best.
We have very fond feelings towards DJ because we created some great shit together.
Is this an intervention or something?
No. I'm trying to figure out a good way to go into this, and I just can't figure it out.
I think I got a segue here. The three of us were all part of something pretty magical.
We were involved in a play a couple of years ago.
Yes.
Called The Boom.
The Boom.
Written by Vinny Nardiello. If we don't say that, he'll kill us.
Is it 3 years ago September?
Yeah.
It'll be three years
in the fall, yeah. And
we had
Mark directed it.
Yep.
Yes.
And DJ and I were in it, and
we had Dan Stern, Kara Jackson, Melissa Stokowski.
Yeah.
And Mike Albanese was running the lights and sound.
It was, and we did a lot of rehearsal right here at the Comic Strip.
Yes, we did.
Yeah.
Right.
A lot.
I gotta tell you guys, it was every rehearsal felt so magical as the director to watch you guys work because you guys brought so much to it. And my favorite.
We had
thing.
To. We weren't getting much direction.
I was about to give you a health fart. I was after the every night of the play, people would come over to me and, like, you directed that. That was so amazing. And I'd have to just look at them and go, I didn't have to do shit. They were amazing.
You did, though. We had a lot of fun.
All I had to do is tell which direction the boat should go.
I did, but I did like your when you would say, I don't make me direct you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you that was like a big thing. You're like, please don't. If I have to, I will. But don't make me direct you. And I got what you meant by that.
I wanted you guys to find it all on your own. I had it in my head how I wanted it to go, but then you guys would bring stuff to the table that was like I can't see it the other way now.
Right.
You guys are right.
People out there in podcast land, this is a play about when comedians are on the road. They used to put us up in hotels while we're playing a certain club in the middle of nowhere, right? And then the clubs finally realize it's much more cost-effective to buy a condo.
Right.
And to never do anything to keep it up. You know what I mean? These are like the crack houses.
The name of that show could have been Fuck the Comics. Because it's really how it is.
Yeah.
You know, like, where are we going to put the comics? Fuck the comics.
Yes.
We'll get a room in the back.
We'll get a warehouse.
Yeah.
We'll put a little.
And that's where the play took place, in this condo.
It is condo. There's always this ratty little condo where, like, a lot of times it's like two or three guys who never worked before, never knew each other.
Right.
And suddenly thrown together for several days. It's almost like this weird, like a psychological experiment. So, me and Richie, we knew each other. We were actually a duo, not a comedy duo, but he was my opening act that I took around the country.
Because he would drive you.
Yeah, and I was this dinosaur. Yeah, right. I was this flying Dutchman. I was this all.
You were a has-been, yeah. Yeah, pretty, yeah, and I was the opening guy.
You were DJ was a washed-up comic. Richie, you were a never-been comic.
Yeah, I was a never, and I was a retired cop.
Retired cop.
And you and I had become friends, and you started taking me on the road with
right,
you.
Right, right.
And I had so much fun playing that part. Because it was so easy. Like, when I read the script, I'm like, I know this guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I've been in condos with this guy.
This is something I compliment to you is, and people out there don't realize this, one of the hardest things to do in acting is to be funny by not being funny.
Yes.
You were trying so hard to be funny and failing that it was funny. And it was all a choice. Yes. It was all a choice
but,
and out of
but
acting.
Through
it
your
wasn't.
Character, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm watching, speaking of which, I'm watching I'm Dying Up Here, yeah. Season 2.
So good.
And Brad Garrett is playing a Rodney Dangerfield-type character, and he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, good for Brad Garrett, to, you know, who's so famous for playing Ray's brother and blah, 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 and a great comic, to not be afraid to go and play this part. Because
a lot of, very serious, likable guy.
But there are other sides. If you watch the show, he is a good guy with certain, but he treats the younger comics like shit.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, and he's not like that, from, you know, Brad Garrett. He's not like that, you know.
Yeah.
And people sometimes forget that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was like for me too. I mean, I know it was a much smaller level, but to be going, oh wow, I'm playing a guy who sucks at this.
Yeah, it was, and the whole cast was amazing. DJ, you had this character down that was almost like this super edgy guy on stage, but in reality, you were like a born again.
On
the wagon.
I was a party monster in the 80s, and I sobered up, and being born again was kind of part of my sobriety, where I kind of like. I would read Bible verses every day.
Yeah.
But then there's a streak behind all this. There was a streak in you of like very angry, a very controlled, angry man once you started drinking again.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
It was so cool to see this guy who's this jovial, lovable, like, hey, I'm everybody's buddy. And then all of a sudden get a couple in him and it's like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
He turned a corner.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really good. Kara. I mean,
Kara
was
wonderful.
She was on two scenes.
She was
amazing.
In
two scenes, and after the show, everybody would like felt like she was on the whole time.
Yeah. I told her here at rehearsal that you raised the bar for everybody.
Yeah, yeah. And Melissa.
Yes. Yes.
Oh my God.
She was hilarious.
Came in, and I got to be honest. And when I watched her in rehearsal, I'm like,
I don't know if this is
going to
work.
She's not going to work. This isn't going to work.
She
and then she,
it.
You took her and went with her, and she, whatever you gave her. I think you.
I get. I'll
she
say what
just,
the note was.
I think it was David Lee Roth or something.
I told her to watch David Lee Roth videos and realize that's who you are.
And
as
she
a woman.
Came out in one of the final rehearsals, and just blew me
she
away.
She was so
like,
goddamn
wow.
funny.
Yeah.
So goddamn. Because the thing is, that's hysterical. Is it's a play about comedians. It's not funny.
Yeah.
It's
right.
very serious.
Yeah, it's a very serious play.
And then there are a couple really funny moments, usually not by the comedians.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody
Yo, you're
else
right.
is funny.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then, Dan cracked me up. I didn't think it was going to happen until the very end.
I had a lot of fun on stage with Dan.
Yes.
Because there was a lot of times where DJ'd have a long monologue or he'd be talking to Kara and they'd have, and Dan and I are supposed to be watching TV and we had more fun coming up with little things without upstaging them because he and I, our characters hated each other.
So you guys had a total flip-flop during the show, too.
Yeah, because there's a classic dynamic going on in the story, because Dan played the middle act, who's actually an up-and-coming phenomenon.
Right.
But the course of the weekend, the club owner decides to switch us, so I'm no longer the headliner.
Right.
I have to deal with that. That's part of the anger.
It's supposed to be the students becoming the teacher moment.
Right, kind
of. But there's also a lot of... There's a wrench thrown in.
Yeah.
And you guys flip-flop, because at the beginning, you kind of look at you as the bad guy.
Yeah, yeah,
and then halfway through, you guys kind of flip. And it,
yeah,
you flip not only opening the headliner, you flip good guy to bad guy.
And yeah, he's the one you feel sorry for.
Right. Yeah. Plus the middle, he's married, he's on the road, and he brings home a groupie.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's when I turn on him in my head.
But the funny thing is, there were a couple of scenes at the end where he and I have to go toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to get heated, and we're getting really close, and our bellies are in the way. We can only get so close. Yes.
They can swing as much as they want. They weren't going to connect.
Thank God it was a big stage. Yes. Yes.
Our faces never met.
No, not even close.
It's like Tyrannosaurus boxing.
That's why DJ's DJ, because I was going to say some things I'm like, not even close to as funny.
I think we should get out on that.
That was Drink Jokes and Storytelling.
Thank you, DJ.
Thank you.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.